America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation and a great day, despite the fact that there is a column, persuasive column, that says there is a curse on Washington, D.C. What is that curse exactly? Well, it is exactly what is befalling the Democrats right now. They supposedly have control of all three branches of government and the House and the Senate and the White House. They have a great deal of influence in the court system, despite the fact that they're outnumbered on the Supreme Court. But what is the curse that the Democrats are facing? And that is one of the questions on the table today, because there are new polling figures and new information and new perspectives that suggest that the Democrats may even be in trouble in Virginia, which is a state they dominated. You know how much Joe Biden won Virginia by? He won by 10 points in Virginia. And right now it is a within the margin of error tie in the governor's race in Virginia, which is coming up in about 2 weeks. In fact, less than that. And we will have a new governor of Virginia, because they have a term limit there. You can only serve one term at a time. And there are smart people at this point who believe that the Republican, Glenn Youngkin, who has done a very good job of sounding reasonable and reaching out to those suburban voters who are so crucial in the elections that we've had recently. We will talk about that and what issue he has developed. And he deserves credit for developing it and emphasizing it, as opposed to some of the less effective issues in that Virginia race. We will be talking about that on the Michael Medved Show. We'll also be talking about why it is that, with the economy not bad, with basically people looking ahead and saying, yes, we have too much inflation and gas prices are too high, but meanwhile, there are other positive elements for the economy. At least most people see them as positive. For instance, because of the inflation, in part, there is going to be a big adjustment upward for Social Security, one of the biggest adjustments in recent years. Now, that impacts a lot of Americans. It impacts a lot of aspects of the economy. But the truth is that, according to the news today, there are about 4.3 million people who quit their jobs in August, accounting for nearly 3% of the workforce, according to the Labor Department. Okay, meanwhile, job openings declined to 10.4 million with the last day of August, down from a high of more than 11 million. What is going on here? Why is it where we have job openings at the same time that so many people are quitting their jobs? And what is going on? And what about the significance of the dignity of work, which has been a conservative ideal, one that even Joe Biden has given some attention to? We'll be speaking with Jerry Boyer, economic thinker and writer, about that. We will also be speaking about the Democratic disarray with Jonathan Allen of NBC News. And the Democratic disarray is exactly what he describes. And then we will be talking about new revelations about longevity, both how to get it and why it is that black longevity is going up faster than white longevity. And in fact, white longevity has gone down to some extent. The gap between black and white has been narrowing, which most people would think to be a good thing. And speaking of longevity, today has been a pretty good day. Well, go further than that. Let's say that today has been a great day for a 90-year-old who was able to realize a dream that he's had for a long time. He is the captain of the United States ship Enterprise, Captain Kirk. Of course, William Shatner, who went up into space today in the Blue Origins project with Jeff Bezos. Now, he was only up there for 10 minutes, but he actually spoke about it beautifully. And this was William Shatner, who, by the way, got a free ride. I mean, when you're 90 years old and you become the oldest guy ever to go up into space, even though it's just a 10-minute flight, but still. This is William Shatner standing right alongside Jeff Bezos and speaking about his trip into the heavens today. This is 6A.
You know, it's rods, mysterious rods, and galaxies and things, but what you see is black. And what you see down there is light, and that's the difference. And not to have this, you have done something. I mean, whatever those other guys are doing, I don't know about that. What you have given me is the most profound experience I can imagine. I'm so filled with emotion about what just happened. It's extraordinary, extraordinary. I hope I never recover from this. I hope that I can maintain what I feel now. I don't want to lose it. It's so much larger than me and life. And it hasn't got anything to do with the little green planet, the blue orb, and the... It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with the enormity and the quickness and the suddenness of life and death of the almighty.
Okay, a little bit emotional. Yeah, but you would be too. I wonder about that because the other passengers, the other three passengers who went on the flight with William Shatner were people who paid for it, and including people who worked with Blue Origins and worked with Jeff Bezos. And, of course, I can imagine that a lot of people would pay a great deal of money even for that 10-minute experience. Would you ever think about that? Shatner had this to say about others experiencing what he just did and how much he wants them to do that. Listen.
I am overwhelmed. I had no idea. You know, we were talking earlier before going, well, you know, it's going to be different. You go, yeah, it's going to. And you have whatever that phrase is you have, that you have a different view of things. It doesn't begin to describe what for me. I mean, everybody's going to. But, and this is now the commercial, everybody. It would be so important for everybody to have that experience.
As so important for everybody to have that experience, I'm not sure everybody wants it. The CBS News was covering the fact that one of the only requirements for people who want to buy this voyage is that they show that they're able to avoid going to the bathroom for at least 90 minutes. Okay, mission accomplished for Mr. Shatner and for Captain Kirk. And maybe in tribute to what he has just accomplished, there is the stunning version that he released of the song Rocket Man. This from the 1978 Saturn Awards. Listen.
I think it's going to be a long, long time. The touchdown brings me around again to find I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh, no, no, no. I'm a rocket man. Rocket man burning out his fuse out here. Hello. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. The touchdown brings me round again to find I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh, no, no, I'm a rocket man. Rocket man, burning out his fuse out.
William Shatner, believe it or not, that's about, over 40 years ago. But some art is timeless. When we come back, we'll be talking further about the difficulties that the Democrats seem to be having, and especially looking forward to a potential wipeout for them in 2022. We'll talk about that coming up. On the Michael Medved show, Democrats are facing a world of trouble, and there's all kinds of evidence of it just in the last 24 hours. In the last 24 hours, they had a fairly momentous announcement. A friend of mine, I mean, it's a guy I knew in school. We were in the same class in college. His name is John Yarmuth. He was the only Democrat who was a member of the Kentucky congressional delegation. He represents a very diverse district in Louisville. He is also a chair of one of the important House committees. And he's one of those congressmen who's been there forever, what, 9 terms? And John Yarmuth has announced he's leaving Congress. And one of the things that they talk about in National Journal, they have a piece that Yarmuth is the 10th Democrat, 10th one, from the House of Representatives who is giving up his seat. Now, some of those people are giving up a seat in Congress to run for higher office. For instance, Connor Lamb in Pennsylvania. And Connor Lamb, who's considered a rising star for the Democrats, is leaving the House to run for the U.S. Senate. But see, one of the reasons he's doing that, and one of the reasons that's considered such bad news in some way for the Democrats, it may help them pick up a Senate seat, but they're almost surely going to be losing a House seat because Connor Lamb, who is a relatively moderate Democrat, is running in one of those districts that Trump carried, but that the Democrats held on to as a congressional seat. Now, they're giving up 10 seats. At least 2 of those seats are districts that are a clear majority Republican. And if you're giving up 10 seats and you're going to lose 2, and then you have other ones that are going to be difficult to defend because there is no incumbent, and the incumbents usually win of either party, whatever's going on, this is very bad news for Democrats because they need to hold virtually everything. They lose 5 seats, and the last time the Republicans swept to a big victory, which was, back in 2010, they actually gained more than 40 seats. Actually, they gained more than 60 seats. They had a complete wipeout for the Republicans. If they do just a fraction of that, they take over the House and no more Nancy Pelosi as Speaker. And all of this is also related very directly to what is going on in Virginia, where they have Election Day coming up in just a couple of weeks. And here is what they said about that, about the Virginia race, on CNN. Jeff Zeleny, listen. Clip 5.
How nervous are Democrats? This is 3 weeks before election night.
Don, significantly, 3 weeks from tonight will be election night, and they are really sending in everyone. We learned earlier today that former President Barack Obama will be coming to Richmond, Virginia, in about a week and a half or so. First Lady Jill Biden coming. A lot of other surrogates. Democrats are very worried about this. They thought Virginia was a solidly blue state. They're learning that may not be the case at all. Of course, Terry McAuliffe's been around a long time. Glenn Youngkin, the outsider, the newcomer, is really catching on here. So the next 3 weeks are very critical, at least in the eyes of Democrats, Don.
And then another CNN segment on how independent voters in Virginia are going to impact the race. Of course, Virginia has differentiated itself from other states in the South because so much of Virginia's population has to do with Fairfax counties and those other parts of Virginia that are right around Washington, D.C., where because of their government workers and highly educated and very well-to-do, and this is sort of classic liberal, suburban Democratic territory. But the independent voters in Virginia that Republicans need to depend on if they want any chance to win anything, that is giving Republicans hope and giving Democrats the chills, big time. This is segment 3, clip 3.
I'm historically an independent voter. I have voted every which way you could vote.
Amy Dodson is not defined by political labels.
I was not a fan of President Trump. I didn't vote for him, and I didn't vote for Biden, but I did vote.
That makes her an important wild card in Virginia, where she cast her vote early this week for one reason above all.
What led me to vote for Glenn Youngkin this time around was education.
Education is a central issue in the final stretch of the closely watched Virginia governor's race, where the power of the parents movement is suddenly front and center.
Okay, the power of the parents movement is suddenly front and center. According to a CBS new poll that they just took, which is pretty incredible, it says that among Virginia voters, this new CBS poll said 62% of them say that school curriculums on race and history are a major factor in their vote for governor. Now, given the fact that Terry McAuliffe, first of all, he made an incredibly stupid comment in one of their debates, and I think it was their first debate, where Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic candidate, the former governor, said that he didn't think that parents should at all concern themselves with curriculum. That wasn't parents' job. It wasn't the role of schools to listen to what parents were saying. Now, that, of course, is just wrong. It's outrageous. And a lot of people responded negatively to it. And then at one point, he was also asked to define critical race theory, which he has been defending, and he couldn't do it. He didn't know what it was. He didn't know that critical race theory means that you believe that America is been set up based on structural racism. It has to do with the 1619 Project. It means that you're going to have children taught that America came into existence not really in 1776, but really in 1619 when the first slaves arrived. Now, why is this Virginia race so very, very important? Because the factor that I was telling you about Democrats quitting and leaving the House of Representatives and helping to doom Democrats' chances of holding the House, that will be tremendously accelerated if Youngkin wins. In other words, if Youngkin, the Republican, wins in Virginia, a state that Biden carried by 10 points, that will send a signal to a lot of Congress people in close districts, probably a good time for me to step aside, because nobody wants to spend all the money, raise all the money, and then suffer all the humiliation of losing in a congressional seat in what is shaping up as if it's going to be just a Republican year. So what are the real odds? And there's a piece in Wall Street Journal by Gerald Seib, great analyst, who says there are some things that Biden could do to turn his fate around, but it's not likely he'll do it. What are those things? We will get to that and to much more. Michael Medved show, there is a provocative question that has turned up in headlines. Can Christmas be saved? Now, we're not talking now about the old story about the war on Christmas. Yeah, they had a war on Christmas and Christmas won. I mean, that kind of was settled, right? Except the problem right now has to do with the supply chain, which is an economic problem. The president was just addressing it this morning with a number of officials from the Port of Los Angeles and elsewhere. What is going on exactly, and why should the supply chain threaten the American economy as profoundly as it is right now? To talk about that, Jerry Boyer is our guest. Jerry is a Forbes contributor. He's a contributing editor of affluentinvestor.com. and a senior fellow in business economics at the Center for Cultural Leadership. Okay, Jerry, first of all, is there a threat, real threat, for Christmas time with Americans not being able to get the products and the supplies and basically all of the various items that they want for the holiday season?
Well, I'd order early just to be sure. But I think there is some slowing down in the supply chain, and I've clearly seen that in the data. And it's one of the things that's driving inflation. When we want to buy more stuff than there's stuff to buy or reach us, then, you know, essentially it's a bidding war and it bids the price up. I feel like there is maybe some commentary in the conservative world, which is my world, which is maybe exaggerating this a little bit, like we're going to have trouble getting food or other things. I think that we have a slowing down in the supply chain, but we don't have a shutdown of the supply chain. But yeah, there might be stuff you want to buy that you can't buy. Now, I would point out that there are times when, you know, we fought World War II or when the American Republic was under attack, you know, or when they, you know, burned the White House down or tried to burn the White House down. We faced worse than having to wait an extra 2 weeks for your Amazon delivery, and I think we can handle this. But, yeah, I think there's some genuine slowdown, and we're going to feel it, and I think we're still going to be feeling it in Christmas. But I wouldn't make it the end of the world.
Okay, in terms of the inflation, there are different points of view about how serious this is, how bad it will get. Comparing what we are facing now to what we actually faced in the 1970s, are we looking at an extended period of significant inflation that Americans are going to feel a lot?
I think we are. I'm not sure that it's going to go as high as it did in the 70s, but I do think it's an extended period. And, you know, I have fellow supply-sider free market economist friends who have been on the other side of this debate, and so I respect them, you know, guys like Steve Moore, et cetera, Larry Kudlow. But I'm still convinced and have been convinced for some time that the risk is up rather than down when it comes to inflation. For a couple of reasons. One, because inflation is a monetary phenomenon. When the government pumps money into the system, that's bidding up the price of things. And when the government or COVID or a declining work ethic or people not wanting to go back to work because of vaccine mandates or probably a combination of all of those means that we're not delivering the goods, inflation is too much money chasing too few goods. We've got both now. We have too much money because we thought we could print our way out of the COVID problem, and we have too few goods because we have, you know, people aren't going back to work for whatever reason, and because there are regulations that make the supply chain harder to work. So the combination of those, I think, creates a high probability that inflation is a bigger problem to the upside than it is to the downside.
Okay, so given the fact that we have these economic problems, people are feeling them right now. I mean, obviously, people are very concerned. You can hear it in the interviews that have been done across the country about the price of gas and the price of normal essentials. People appear to be, if not alarmed, at least nervous. Is this going to have a political impact? Because I know you also follow the political markets, the prediction markets. It's now overwhelming, isn't it, that people suspect that the Republicans are going to come out better in the midterm elections than the Democrats?
Yes, in both houses. The probability market now favors Republicans in control of both houses. And that was before the inflation spike. That was after what I would describe, other people might have a different view, but what I would describe as the bungling in the withdrawal from Afghanistan. People can have different views, but I think it's widely perceived that it was mishandled. So the probability markets shifted then, but they've shifted even more towards Republicans in general in the next presidential election, which is pretty far out to be predicting. So I'm not sure how much confidence I put in that, but also in the coming congressional elections. So at this point, the base case would be for Republicans to come out in control of both the Senate and the House, because this is a kitchen table issue. People notice inflation. And I've been in some events where I've been on panels with financial experts, but with regular investors in the audience. And I take a poll of the panel, you know, how many of you think inflation is going to be a big problem? Hardly any hand goes up. And then I turn to the audience, how many of you think inflation is going to be a big problem? And every hand goes up. How many of you are already seeing it? And the hands go up. And then I say, how many of you do your own shopping? And the hands go up. Anybody who's doing their own shopping knows inflation is a problem. People who live in and around economic modeling or markets aren't nearly as quick to see it.
Okay, in terms of the Republican takeover of the House and the Senate, now there's an argument going on as to whether that actually helps or hurts Republican chances in the year 2024. Because, of course, right now it's pretty obvious who's to blame if things are going wrong. But if the Republicans have just taken over, we just had a switch in the direction of Republican governance, then if things continue to go wrong for the Biden administration, for the country, in 2023, 2024, isn't it possible Republicans can end up with some of that blame?
Yeah, shared power is shared responsibility, and shared responsibility is shared blame. So right now, Republicans can stand aside from it and say, no, we're not going to vote for the debt ceiling. And then, you know, the president tends to get blamed because the president is a point, you know, of accountability. So let's say that, you know, we take, and when I say we, I'm talking about conservative Republicans, let's say we take back the, you know, the Congress, then it's a little harder for us to say, well, it's all Biden. Then we're sharing some of the responsibility, and we actually have to govern like grown-ups. Now, what could happen is Biden could do what Clinton did, move to the center, triangulate. I mean, there is an argument for that. Biden is historically less left-wing than the base of his party right now. He's not AOC. He is governing from the left, but he's caving in to the left. You can tell that he's like barely knows how to speak the language, and when he says LGBTQ, he's not sure what Q stands for or whatever. He's sort of like playing along with his base. So if they lose big time, he could come along and say, you know what, I'm going to kind of go back to my Union Democrat roots.
Okay, one of the things that I'm just writing a piece about this, I don't think Biden is going to be the nominee. And, he would be 82 years old. If he were the nominee for next time,
and probability market is shows him almost in a dead heat with Harris.
Really,
which means that if you add up all of the probability markets, like Harris and everybody else, he has a minority probability of being the nominee. In other words, he's got the biggest probability at, I don't know, like 37%, right? But that's not 37% is not over 50. So he's the plurality, but not the majority probability.
Okay, if you were put on the spot, who do you think would be the Democratic nominee? I think it won't be Kamala Harris, and I think it won't be Joe Biden. Who would you vote for, or not vote for? Who would you predict? Vote for either of them. I got it.
Right, there's nobody in the party that I think, like, I don't know, maybe, you know, Tulsi. I couldn't even vote for her. Here's the problem. The party is captured by the hard left. So I have trouble seeing them nominating someone who can win a general election.
That's Jerry Boyer. You can read his material. It's linked at our website at michaelmedved.com. Always fascinating, always insightful. Jerry, have a terrific week. The rest of it, we will be right back on the Medved Show.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
Kinds of people in American politics. There are some wonderful people. There's some in the middle people. There's some people who aren't so great. But one of the truly wonderful people, I mean, when you get to know him as a human being, is Dr. Ben Carson. He was a wonderful person before he got into politics, and he's survived as an absolutely wonderful person. And he is going to be making a relatively rare appearance here in behalf of the Washington Policy Center, and it's this Friday, and it's an event you don't want to miss. It's their annual dinner and 25th anniversary celebration over in Spokane at the Davenport Grand. But you can head over there. You can support WPC's fight for free market reform in Washington State, and you can see one of the nation's most accomplished and eloquent leaders. Go to WPCdinner.com, that's WPCdinner.com, for tickets and registration. Virtual tickets are also available. Take part in this great organization's great event with a great American, WPCdinner.com. There's some breaking news that isn't so terrific, which is that just minutes ago, several people were killed and others were injured by a man armed with a bow and arrow near the Norwegian capital of Oslo. The police said the suspected attacker was arrested. There are several injured and also dead. The police chief in the town of Konigsborg, Øyvind Aas, that's the name of the police officer, said at a press conference on Wednesday night, which is tonight, that's right now in Norwegian time. That, according to the Norwegian broadcaster NRK, no details were immediately available on the numbers of dead and injured. According to police, the suspected perpetrator walked around the city, shooting at people with a bow and with arrows. He was arrested, and an investigation is underway into the motive of the attack. Now, of course, this is nothing like that hideous attack from several years ago in Norway, the one that killed over 70 young people, an attack of a downtown political headquarters and of a young socialist camp. And one of the things that is remarkable about that, and honestly, I would be surprised if there weren't some push within the Norwegian political system to change all of this. You may remember that mass murderer who killed more than 70 people, he was a neo-Nazi and somebody very much identified with white supremacist and neo-Nazi ideas. But he's alive. Now, he's guilty. He's never denied his guilt. He planted a bomb. Bomb didn't work, but his rifles worked fine to kill literally dozens of innocent people. And yet he's living in the relative comfort of the Norwegian prison system. And I think it's important every once in a while that we give attention to some of these awful, crazy things that happen abroad, because I think there's so many strange and inexplicable and unhealthy and depressing things that seem to be happening in our country right now. We tend to forget about the even greater difficulties that afflict other countries abroad, including Norway, which relatively comes out as one of the happier countries in the world, one of the ones that is most favored economically and in terms of its political system and everything else. The fact that this is also a series of bow and arrow attacks, this does not mean that bows and arrows are equally dangerous to guns. They're not. But it means that murder is murder. And the idea that a bow and arrow killing would get less attention everywhere than a killing of the same number of people by some other implement that would happen to be a firearm, I think is an indication of some of the askewed view that we have on issues of violence, which has to do with people choosing to perpetrate the violence, not so much with the tools they use to do it. I want to go back for just a moment to this Virginia's governor's race, because if on it's exactly 15 days from tonight, is it, or is it 20? It's the beginning of November. They are going to have the election, and they're going to choose a new governor of Virginia. And it's the first time for a while that a Republican has a real chance, a competitive race that he's running. And according to the numbers from CBS News poll, right now, when they ask voters, who would you choose, who are you planning to vote for? First of all, a bunch of people have voted already. In fact, a large number of Democrats have voted already, because Democrats tend to vote early. Republicans, as we all remember from Election Day of last year, are much more likely to vote on Election Day itself. But the race generally shows that McAuliffe, the Democrat, 50%, Youngkin, the Republican, 47%. That's within the margin of error, which is 4%. And one of the things that they're finding that is, I think, extraordinary is that McAuliffe had really assumed that he would win on the issue of mandates, and particularly of vaccination mandates, because all the polling in Virginia, and frankly in most places across the country, show that when people are asked about mandates, most people favor them. For instance, in this particular poll from CBS, should Virginia businesses require COVID vaccine for employees? 54% said yes, 46% said no. So given the fact that, and by the way, Glenn Youngkin is not a big stalwart anti-vax mandate guy, but he is less enthusiastic, less emphasizing that in issue than Terry McAuliffe, the Democrat. And then it just doesn't show that big an advantage for McAuliffe. For instance, who would do a better job handling COVID vaccines? McAuliffe is ahead, but very slightly, 46% to 41%. And then who would do a better job creating more jobs, which should be a more profound long-term issue? And that the Republican, Glenn Youngkin, has an edge, 45 to 41. And it's simply not working, this vaccine issue, as an issue for the Democrats. What about the influence of Joe Biden? Joe Biden is not coming to the state. He's been to the state before with Terry McAuliffe. And they're paying a lot of attention to this because the Democrats know that what happens in Virginia is going to have a big influence on the congressional midterm election in November of next year. And the reason it's going to have that influence is because there will be a bunch more Democrats, veteran Democrats, who quit Congress if it looks like it's going to be a sure thing for Republicans to take over, which it's beginning to look like. But their feelings about Biden being very motivating to vote, Youngkin voters actually are much more likely to be motivated by Biden in a negative way, to vote against Biden, 58 to 41. Biden is not popular in Virginia for somebody who just carried the state by 10 points, which shows some of the difficulties and some of the problems that he has had. And then this is what basically is leading people like CBS and others to say, hold on, Terry McAuliffe may not be the front runner at all anymore, because they asked independent voters who are likely to vote, who are you going to vote for? And the Republican, Glenn Youngkin, is 9 points ahead. Youngkin, 53%. McAuliffe, 44%. That's a big gap. And then there's this. The how heavily motivating is Donald Trump as a factor in your vote? Among Youngkin voters, 49% are motivated to vote for Youngkin because of Trump. But then 53%.